This is Dr. David Stevens, your host of Christian Doctor's Digest. Thanks for getting together with me. You know what we're going to do today? We're going to go to school. We've got a great lineup in store. In fact, I'm used to talking about school because almost all my family are teachers. My brother, my sister, their spouses, my wife. We always used to talk about what was happening in school when we got together. Well, we've got some great education for you today. First, we're going to have Dr. Alveda King visit the class. This is Dr. Martin Luther King's niece, and she's going to be talking about her new book, King Rules. And it's about principles that can really help us on our walk through life and help us with our kids. Next, Steve Satori is going to sit down with us along with Ann Sin. They're going to talk about our new coaching program here at CMDA and how that can provide training and insight for you on life's paths. And then Teresa Flores is going to come into the classroom and talk to us about human trafficking. She herself was a victim. And she's going to give us some insights that are going to be intensely practical to us in helping to identify victims and help them. Well, let's don't take any longer. The bell's just rung. We've got to go back to school. We want to welcome to the classroom Dr. Alveda King. She's not a stranger to this venue because she's a former college professor, as well as serving the Georgia State House of Representatives. Dr. King was raised in the Civil Rights Movement. Her father was the brother of Dr. Martin Luther King. Her family home in Birmingham was bombed during that time, as was her father's office in Louisville, Kentucky. And she sees the pro-life movement as a continuation of the civil rights struggle. She's been very involved in it, works with Priests for Life as one of their spokespersons. She also has received many awards because of her efforts in this area, including the Cardinal John O'Connor Pro-Life Hall of Fame Award in 2011. She's an accomplished actress and a songwriter. She's written many books. And today she's going to sit down with us and talk about King Rules, principles she learned in the King family. You're going to find this exceedingly helpful to you as you think about your own family and your own life. She gives some powerful insights. Let's see what she has to say. Dr. King, thanks so much for taking time out of your busy schedule. I know you're on a book tour right now, and I know how busy those can be. But I wanted to talk to you about your wonderful new book, King Rules. And, you know, it's really based on the King family legacy. I spent Sunday afternoon, reading the book and thoroughly enjoyed it and kept finding myself saying to my wife, listen to this. And so I was so glad we get an opportunity to talk to you and share that with our membership. But tell us a little bit about the King family legacy and what moved you to write a book about that.
Well, Dave, I tell you this. When I speak to people like you who are right there serving your community, making sure that people are healthy and sound, and I know you care about them spirit, soul, and body, and you're teaching that so well, but as we work with people who are various age groups, I'm 64 years old, I'm sure you see people and you and all of your listeners of every age group, every ethnic group, but all people have the same question, how can I have a better life?
Mm-hmm.
People will generally say, how can I have a happier life? But you'll find in my book, the last rule is joy, find your joy, which is actually deeper than happiness, but we can talk about that in a few minutes. So then people say, well, how did Martin Luther King Jr. grow up? What made him the man that he became? Well, we know that the Lord did. Of course, we say Jesus did, surely, Father God, Holy Spirit. But what kind of principles did he have? And I found this lovely scripture in the Bible, may the king's rule be as refreshing as rain. And we're not talking about human kings. We're talking about the king.
Mm-hmm.
And so I found out through many questions, through many years, that listeners want to know, what were the standards, the rules, that helped to form Martin Luther King Jr.? So, blessedly, we've got 10 of them. How about that?
And there's some wonderful ones. What are some of your favorites of those rules? Share them with us. I know we can't get through all of them, but what are some of your favorites that really are close to your heart?
let me capsule them, and I can kind of run through the 10 really, really fast
sure.
and answer that question. Because you notice that I start with make your home a priority, and I end with find your joy.
Mm-hmm.
And then between those two, you see make home a priority, serve your family, and then get a good education. Education can't be God, but you still need to study to show yourself approved. And then guard your heart. So home, heart, and joy are really three of my favorites. But after guard your heart, number five, defend life. Very important. After we defend life, we want to serve the needy. We want to search for peace and justice. We want to find the beloved community where racial harmony comes. Acts 17:26, one blood, God made all people. There are no separate races. And then find your joy. And I know you've got another question, but let me say this, folks. Happiness. I've got children and grandchildren. My grandchildren are so happy when they get a jar of bubbles and an ice cream cone. And they are really happy until something else comes along and they forget about that and they look for something else. And happiness can be fleeting. But joy, even in the midst of sorrow, temptation, challenges, there's a deep place in our hearts where joy lives and love lives. God is love. Faith is there. And if we can find that place, then we can always move forward in life. So to answer your question, home, joy, and guard your heart. That's the romance, love, and marriage, and all of that. Those are probably my favorites.
It's interesting that you really emphasize joy, Alveda, because you guys have, your whole family's been through a number of tragedies, not only with your uncle, Martin Luther King, but also with your dad. And how do you keep your joy in the midst of those terrible tragedies when godly men who love the Lord and were serving him are taken away?
My grandfather, Dr. Martin Luther King Sr., my daddy, Reverend Alfred Daniel Williams King, and he was known as A.D., my uncle M.L., Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., in the midst of terror, trials, hatred, they had this amazing ability to stop, love each other, and laugh. And wherever there's laughter and love, wherever that's love, really, let's put that, God is love. 1 Corinthians 13 says, love never fails. So they had the ability, no matter what was going to plug in, I call it, to that eternal source. And that's how you find your joy. My uncle liked that scripture, Uncle Emil, weeping may endure for a night, but joy comes in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And he really would say that. And he just had that place. You could see it in their eyes. And maybe if you're ever around me and things are really bad, you might say, oh, she's gone. She has clocked out. Well, I've gone to Psalms 23, the Lord is my shepherd. He prepares a place. So I go to that little secret place
yeah.
and find it. So my family, in our King family legacy, and it is a legacy, it's not limited to Martin Luther King Jr. He was not born in a vacuum. And so we can find those places, yes.
Tell us a little bit about that legacy. That's something I so much enjoyed in the book. You just see how God brought together through generations that legacy which you now enjoy and which had such an impact on our whole country. Share a little bit about that.
Well, I think because we even have the family tree. One of my daughters did a lot of work on finding our ancestry. And my grandfather, Daddy King's sister, used to say, well, some of our people came from Ireland. Everybody's like, yeah, right. We know we're African-Americans. We know we're Negroes. We know we're black people. She says, but honestly, we did. So I actually had an opportunity to travel to Ireland twice. I took my daughters on one of the trips, went over to the registry, and there enough, Nathan Branham King, Daddy King's grandfather, was there in that registry. And then Mama King's people, Willis Williams, was a slave preacher. The Caucasians and the whites, they were called colors back then, all came to hear him preach because the gospel was so true, the way he presented it. So those freedom-fighting gospel roots kind of followed us through seven generations. And that's the King family legacy. It's not limited to a man. It's not limited to a personality. You have imperfect people, all of us, including myself. And I don't know if you know my own testimony about how I went away from God and came back in 1983. But it's imperfect people who serve a perfect, perfect God.
Yeah, and that's what we all are. You know, I did. That was a fascinating story, and you may want to share a little of that background because your passion now on the abortion issue, and I know you're spending a significant amount of your time working on that issue and are part of Priests for Life. That grew out of your own experience, didn't it?
It did, and I'm 64 years old now, and on my 65th birthday, I'm not going to retire, but I'll be working full-time for God. But I am blessed and honored to have taken the last 10 years of my full-time working vocational life on the journey doing pro-life work, and it's been so powerful, so inspiring. And I work with Priests for Life. I've been in the pro-life world like 31 years, 83 when I was born again. Mm-hmm. I began to publicly tell my own testimony and begin to fight against the lies of abortion. But blessed in these last 10 years, it will be, to have worked with Father Frank Pavone, Janet Morana, the Priests for Life team. I'm a non-denominational Christian, working with a Catholic organization. And Father Frank and I put it this way. He loves to quote my uncle's speeches. I do now, my father and granddaddy. And Martin said, Uncle Emil said, he had a dream that Protestants and Catholics and Gentiles and Jews would join together and sing Free at Last. So Father Frank said, let's just sing Free at Last. So here you have a Catholic and a non-denominational, tongue-talking Christian, and we're singing Free at Last together.
Well, and there's been such a great unity on the stand for life between Catholics and especially evangelical Protestants on this issue that I just think God's smiling on, because we need to be there in that battle together. One of the things I enjoyed so much about your book was just feeling like I had walked into your family home and met your family. You had such a wonderful way of sharing about those relationships and the principles which made your family so strong. What are some of your favorite childhood memories of those years that so influenced your life?
Well, actually, there are only two photos in the book. You'll notice that, a King family Christmas. I think my cousin Isaac was the baby there, and after him came seeing Bernice and Angela. But Christmas together, holidays together, summer, winter, spring. We got together several times during the year. Even during the times in the 50s, Uncle Emil and Uncle Retta's home was bombed. In the 60s, Daddy and Mother, that's A.D. and Naomi. But even in the midst of those times, I'm telling you, we were able to always step into those places of joy. So we would get together, love each other, fellowship. I remember that. And that's a family custom in our lives. And I talked about the time with Uncle Emil in the book, because the women in our homes were very secure in their roles. Mm-hmm. So they served their husbands, they honored their husbands, but it didn't take anything away from them, because sometimes they had careers, they did things, they were powerful ladies, but home and husband and children were very important. So the women would always have a comfortable place. Today we would call it the man cave, but it was really the study, the library, the office. And the man in the home, of course, had that private place where, with the preachers especially, they could study their sermons and et cetera. And that the slippers would always be next to the chair, the house shoes, and something very comfortable. So I followed Uncle Emil around one Sunday because I was babysitting for he and his wife. And when he came home, I would hide and slip around behind him to try to find out more about him. He pretended he didn't see me. I know he saw me, but I peeped around the corner, and he went in his study, sat in his chair, sighed, and nestled into the chair for a moment, took off his shoes, wiggled his toes in his socks, and then slipped on his slippers. So that security in his home, even during those turbulent times, and I saw it with all the men who were on the front line, the women who were supporting. Of course, the women sometimes went on marches and things like that, especially Aunt Corette and my mother, but just home and family, respect for the head of the home, the dad, the women being in a strong supportive role, the children being obedient. And we weren't browbeat or abused or traumatized. We were required to obey, though. And in that, but we were able to form personalities that allowed us to know that there was nothing in this world that we could not do or conquer.
Well, wonderful memories of God's faithfulness. And your Christian faith played such an important role in every aspect of the family. And I thought in the book you just illustrated that so clearly. And I can especially relate to the idea coming home after preaching. My dad was a pastor and evangelist, and I remember him telling me when I was young, he said, "Dave, I feel like I've dug ditches all day when I finish preaching. I never understood Amen. That until I started Amen. Doing it." And it it just emotionally wears you out. And I know you've done that too. You give mm-hmm. everything and letting the Holy Spirit use you. And that little place to come back and restore is so important. What do you hope this book's going to accomplish? I know you're out telling people about it, and I know writing a book's kind of like having a baby. There's a lot of labor, labor and pain getting it out there, and you're a busy woman. What do you hope this book's going to accomplish?
Well, I thank Thomas Nelson, the Nelson publishers, for giving me the opportunity to tell these truths, these 10 truths. And I really pray and hope and believe that, you know, especially Generation Z, that's the people who were born like the 80s, 90s, on into this century. They're asking how, why, what. If you're willing to admit that you did make mistakes, then we're willing not to make those same mistakes. But you've got to give us something. Where is that firm foundation that you people sing about?
Mm.
Well, we've tried to now, Nelson and I have brought to you that firm foundation. And it's my prayer that, you know, I even tell people, and I guess I'll have to come up with a thought about that, bookmarks or refrigerator magnets or something, 10 rules. And you wake up in the morning and say, "Lord, how am I going to make my life better?"
Yeah.
And then you look at those rules. Well, make home a priority, serve my family, go through them, get a good education, guard my heart and my body, by the way, and keep going, defend life, care for the needy, seek for justice, seek for peace, find a beloved community, and find my joy. And as we go through those 10 things, you'll see that. There's a website, kingrulesbook.com. And there you can even find some of the pictures that are not in the book and different types of things there. Some of the wonderful endorsements, Dr. Ben Carson, J.C. Watts, Herman Cain, Mike Huckabee, and many more who embrace this. Because, and I even said to Glenn Beck one day, I said, "You and all of your media people are responsible for this book, because you've been asking me for a long time, what was it like?"
Mm-hmm.
And now I've done my best. I pray this is a gift to you, to give you some of those principles that help not only to give us Martin Luther King Jr., but the King family legacy.
Well, you were an educator formerly for 19 years in university, and you've done a wonderful job in this book, Alveda, educating us, inspiring us, encouraging us, and giving us a tool. I think of all our members out there, and what a great opportunity to put this into the hands of their patients, to their family members, to their kids. What a wonderful way to inspire, encourage, and educate them on the really important issues of life that are going to really form their future. So thank you for your dedicated service to us all and for your strong voice for life, which has been a blessing to so many. Thank you for all you've done.
Dave, thank you, and God bless you.
Listen, if you'd like to get a copy of King Rules, and I really encourage you to do that, it is a powerful book. You can get it here at CMDA. Just go to cmda.org. You can order it online in the bookstore or give us a toll-free call, 888-230-2637, and one of my wonderful staff would be delighted to help you. Well, the next guest in our classroom are coaches, Dr. Steve Sartori and Dr. Ann Sen. You're going to enjoy getting to know them. Steve's a board-certified family practice doc, practiced for over 30 years in eastern part of Kentucky, was the medical director and CEO of a group practice, chief of staff at two different hospitals, faculty member at a family medicine residency, and has served a lot with CMDA. He was on the board of trustees, served as our treasurer for a number of years, and has been very involved in short-term missions all over the world. He's also a life coach. Dr. Ann Sen is a board-certified internist. Her husband's a cardiac surgeon. She's been very involved in providing indigent care for the underserved at New Heights Clinic on the West Coast. She's on the advisory council of both the Christian Coaching Ministry of CMDA and Women in Medicine and Dentistry. She's a certified physician life development coach. So let's try to find out what coaching's all about. Steve, what is coaching? When I think of coaching, I think of Kentucky basketball, just like you do, because you're from Kentucky. We're not talking about that kind of coaching. What is coaching?
You know, that's an interesting question, Dave. You're right. It's not athletic coaching. Coaching is where a person comes alongside of another person to really help guide them to go to where they want to go. It's driven by the client. The client has goals that they want to reach, and the coach helps them to reach the goal. There are some similarities with athletic coaching in that if you're an athletic coach, you want your athlete to perform to the top of his or her ability. Same way with coaching, I want you or my coachee to realize their potential to the fullest, to live up to all that God has poured into their lives. It's about their life. So we facilitate that by going through a certain skilled process to bring that person and help that person get to their goals.
And how did you get interested in coaching? I mean, how did this start in your life?
Well, I had never heard of coaching until about 4 years ago when Mike McLaughlin, the CMDA Western Region Director, and Ken Jones, who is the Bay Area Director, pastor, and a coach for doctors through CMDA currently, put on a one-day seminar in Portland, Oregon, where I live. And my husband heard about it and said, we should go. So I went for some odd reason, somewhat reluctantly. I think we were just busy at the time. But I was completely captivated as they described a new model of interacting with others. And specifically, I was thinking about medical students because we host the OHSU student group in our home. That was really all focused on helping someone else move to where they want to be or where God's calling them to be. I'd been mentoring for years and felt like I was getting a little tired of the students always asking about me. And so I was just really captivated that day by the power of this tool, even as we practiced on each other, the doctors helping doctors. And the other thing that captivated me was that Ken and Mike described how coaching was regulated by an international federation certification process, required a lot of rigorous training and certain competencies you had to meet and ethics guidelines and all of that. The professionalism of that attracted me. So I kind of tucked away this little dream that kind of went in the back corner of my mind that, gosh, maybe someday I could actually get certified and do that, you know, more extensively. And then I started practicing on medical students and really enjoyed that. And then about 2 years later, I was invited to go to a Christian coach training seminar, and that's where God really got my attention and grabbed me with the power of this and just kind of took off after that.
What's the difference between regular coaching and Christian coaching?
Well, you know, I see Christian coaching as bringing another element to the coaching process, and that's the power of the Holy Spirit, where the person being coached and the coach, if they're both Christians, have this supernatural ability to have insight into what God's perspective is on the issue. That's something that's not brought to the table in ordinary coaching. We still use the same techniques. There's nothing different about what we do in a secular versus a Christian coaching environment. But we have that extra piece of God somehow supernaturally doing what only God can do, and that's sharing the insight of the Holy Spirit to guide the conversation.
You know, Ann, you said this is different than mentoring or counseling or, you know, other terms we're probably more familiar with. Coaching is a fairly new one to many people. How does it differ? I mean, how does the technique work? I know you can't teach us the technique, but I mean, how does it work that makes it different than what people normally think in those arenas?
Well, you know, one thing that grabbed my attention that day that Ken Jones and Mike McLaughlin were teaching us was a chart that Ken put up that listed the differences between coaching, consulting, counseling, mentoring, and discipling. And one of the key differences in coaching is that the expertise is assumed to lie within the coachee. We see that God has given people incredible potential for creatively discovering insights and solving their problems, and the coach comes alongside to help move them forward. Whereas in counseling, it's really oftentimes a look back to bring healing, to bring you into a present place of health, and the counselor is looked at as being somewhat of an expert. They tend to ask questions more to answer questions about why a person is hurting or struggling. In coaching, the questions are designed to help the person being coached gain more insight and reflect and open up possibilities. So it's not to give information to the coach to make some sort of diagnosis, but it's really to help the coachee move forward.
Why is this so important in healthcare, Anne? I mean, I think I know the answer to that because healthcare is in a big mess right now and everybody's struggling. But maybe you want to comment on it in a different way than my summary.
There's two ways. One is that certainly I have found coaching to end up bleeding into my interactions with patients. And that's been really exciting as I've seen how to tap into the motivations and barriers and even ask patients, what is their goal for their disease? And they sometimes are surprised by that question, but it really brings them to a place of greater ownership for their compliance and really making good choices. But secondly, I think that healthcare professionals have a hard time stopping and taking stock of their lives and considering what are their true core values and lining up their life with them. Coaching is an incredible opportunity to be listened to really well in a way that very few of us are, and to be asked the questions that most people in our life are not asking us, because these questions are asked you for your own benefit, to help you grow. And I think that coaching helps people discover what are their core values and then take the steps to actually line their life up with the core values and their sense of God's calling on their life. It opens up new possibilities, and Dr. Sartori and I and Ken Jones can give you story after story of seeing the excitement and energy of people who finally realize there's all kinds of possibilities for rearranging their life such that they're really living in alignment with God's call on their life and not just pushed and pushed by the tyranny of the urgent.
Steve, tell us one of those stories.
There are several, Dave, and I am a novice at coaching, so I haven't a wealth of experience like Ken or Ann would have. But during times of transition, when a doctor decides, you know, this isn't really working, or I need to do something different, or I can't just keep keeping these hours or whatever, but at times of transition, when doctors really examine their lives, what do I want to do? Do I want to change careers? Do I want to stay in healthcare? Do I want to retire early? What do I want to do? A lot of doctors are going through that choice process right now. So one of my coachees decided that he would start something new. He decided it was an opportunity, and the stressors of the moment were simply a springboard that God had designed in his life. God uses the pressure cookers of life to alert us to certain things, oftentimes opportunities that we would not have considered were it not for that particular set of circumstances. He stepped back from it. He decided, what would I really like to do? So he decided he enjoyed direct patient care, where there was no third-party intervention, for instance. This was not driven by me. This is totally driven by the client. And he said, I want to start a direct primary care practice, back to the kind of old-fashioned medicine where you say, I see the patient, we don't have a third-party insurance program, it's you and me, we have 30 minutes together to spend time together, we agree on a price of what it's worth, and we like each other, we enjoy each other, you get better care, you get more focused care, you get more personalized care, and he's having joy in that right now.
And give me a story from what you've done, because I know you've done this extensively with other physicians. What are some of the things that have happened as you've asked those penetrating questions that got them thinking down the right road?
Probably my favorite story is a young woman physician who emailed me with the title of the email said, Need Advice, which piqued my interest because I realized I don't give advice anymore. I'm a coach. So we set up a phone date, and I put on my coach hat without her even knowing in the sort of phone call just to hear what was her issue. And she was on the brink of quitting medicine. She had two children, shared a practice, with her husband and just felt very overwhelmed at her job, loved being home with her girls, felt a clear call by God to medicine back when, but just couldn't figure out how to overcome this feeling of overwhelm. And she'd lost her joy, she'd lost her sense of ministry and mission and medicine. And just during the 45, 60 minutes that we talked, I listened 90% of the time and asked her two or three questions and just sort of raised the possibility of perhaps she could just work it differently. It wasn't a suggestion, but that's kind of what she saw, was she could just maybe work smarter or work differently. And she said later, and I offered her coaching, that she went from despair and no hope about her career to realizing that there were all kinds of possibilities for making this work. So we've been coaching several weeks now, and she says that coaching has literally saved her career. Her joy is returning, and just this last week, her big dream came into view, and you could hardly keep her in her seat. It was just this alignment of what was really important to her, her sense of God's call on her, and a vision for how God could really use their entire practice to really forward his kingdom. So that's one story.
Steve, we're talking about expanding significantly, and you're in that leadership role as a director of coaching ministry for CMDA. What's the vision of doing this in CMDA and helping our members as well as non-members who are dealing with some of the issues we've already heard about, and I'm sure many others?
Well, as you know, Dave, you know the mission and vision of this organization better than anyone, and we want to see doctors whose lives are transformed so they can transform their world. If we have a group of doctors who are just overtaken by the difficulties of the current environment of healthcare, who become somewhat impotent about somehow using the gospel in their practices and influencing their worlds, their families, their practices, we don't want that. We want doctors who have energy, who have strength, who are operating on the basis of what God has equipped them to do and how he's empowered them. And everyone is uniquely gifted, everyone. And if we can help people live up to their potential, then those lives will be very influential in the lives of others. So the vision of CMDA and this ministry would be to empower our physicians to live the kinds of lives that we think God wants out of a Christian physician in today's healthcare environment. And so many of us will admittedly say we fall short because the culture and the very environment we live in is so toxic and difficult that sometimes just getting through a day is a challenge in and of itself. I've lived in that environment for 30 years now. And I can tell you, it's a challenge, as you know, too. And you hear from so many doctors. So we want doctors who are thriving, not merely surviving. We want them to be good for God.
Let's talk about the mechanics of it, because, I mean, definitely is the vision. CMDA is going to be actually offering coaching. And how's that going to work?
That's the proposal. CMDA is uniquely positioned to do this, Dave. CMDA has communication among a breadth of Christian healthcare practitioners around the United States. There are many coaches out there. There are fewer coaches who coach physicians and healthcare sector people. There are even fewer, if any, coaches who coach from a Christian perspective to physicians and practitioners of faith. So CMDA is the logical choice where this connection occurs, where coaches meet physicians. And so I really believe that we can make that work within the context of CMDA. It's the natural conduit. It's the place where people can come, and they can come to CMDA. And CMDA will provide them a service, a coaching service. All of the intense kind of details are currently being worked out, but will shortly be worked out where we can make that available to doctors. And they will begin to realize the value that is there, as others have.
I'm a busy doctor, Steve. How in the world do I find time for coaching?
You know, coaching is very user-friendly to a busy doctor. Mm. It involves a set-apart, scheduled piece of time, just like you would schedule for a patient visit, just like you'd schedule for a medical staff meeting, anything like that. It's done usually in segments of time, typically anywhere from 30 to 60 minutes per session, by telephone. You can be anywhere in the world and do it. So the coach can be anywhere in the world. You can be anywhere in the world. You can connect on telephone. You can connect on Skype. You can connect on GoToMeeting. There's all kinds of varieties now of technology that we can use to connect people. For an hour or less of your time, you can do it once a week. You can do it typically two or three times a month. Most people average about three times a month or close to weekly sessions during the coaching engagement. Very easy to schedule. The coach is very flexible. He will work with you after hours. He will work with you before hours. He or she will accommodate your schedule. You are the client. You're the expert. You're driving the schedule. You tell the coach, I can only meet at such and such a time.
And give us some other of the issues that a physician or other healthcare professional may want to coach for.
I think any issue where a person feels a need to change, but the inability to make it happen. They've been trying the same old thing. They've been trying to think their way out of a problem. It's not happening. They have a vague sense of discontent. It can be even personal issues, family, parenting, marriage, health, you know, weight and exercise. It can be practice-based issues, relationships with difficult colleagues or staff, how to maximize the potential of your staff. Decisions and transitions. Do I change practices? Which specialty do I go into for a resident? Do we move to this other town? Even a loss of a sense of your calling and mission, not even knowing what that is. And just time management and how to pare things down and live a more balanced life and take care of your priorities, take care of your family better, that kind of thing.
What about getting healthcare coaching training? I mean, training for people in healthcare. And I know you went through that process. Tell us about it.
Well, I went through my training at an organization that trains a lot of ministry leaders. You know, it can be done in many different ways. I did it in a week intensive thing with several follow-up, what they call teleclasses, where we all joined 15 of us on a phone class. So it can be done live, it can be done via webinars, it can be done in small chunks or in huge chunks, and there's a certain number of hours and various things that need to be covered to reach the requirements of the International Coach Federation. And I think that Steve could probably address more directly what the vision is for wrapping specific coach training for Christian physicians and dentists into the CMDA culture.
You know, coach training has benefit regardless of whether you have an intention to become a life coach. The tools that we learn in coaching are deployed across your spectrum of relationships and conversations. It's instruction in how do we develop conversations where we listen more than we speak, we ask questions more than we deliver answers, and we strive to have people get the best out of their own lives. So that kind of education is beneficial whether you wish to use it or not. A doctor who gets even a rudimentary or a beginning amount of coach training could use that in his practice, could use that with his colleagues, could use that in the medical staff meetings, could use that with training his staff. These are tools that can be transferred and used across the board without wearing any official title of coach. On the other hand, if you wish to pursue it further and actually become trained and certified, then of course there are very prescribed pathways that will take you there. And there is only one coach credentialing recognized entity in the world right now, and that's the International Coach Federation. So training programs strive to be accredited and aligned with the requirements of the International Coach Federation. From a CMDA perspective, we hope to one day develop a coach training program in the not distant future that will provide doctors interested in using these skills, also that will provide pathways to certification. And the nice thing about that is that we think we can provide training that will provide both continuing medical education that will satisfy the medical accreditation process. Every doctor has a certain reaccreditation. They have certain continuing education requirements every year. We think we can do that and simultaneously add the added value of coach certification to it. So you can kill two birds with one stone, get double value for the kind of training. Harvard currently offers a course like that. We believe CMDA can offer a course like that.
That's great. And then the goal is a core group of Christian physicians, dentists, other healthcare professionals that are actually providing that service through CMDA for people who say, hey, I need a coach.
That's right. I think coaching is new, and it will take a little while for physicians to begin to realize the value that they can get from coaching. That's how I got introduced to it a bit, was that Scott Reese advised me to seek a coach when I was at a time of transition in my life. And yeah. I did just that. And Ken Jones, who's a coach with CMDA, helped me to understand what that process looked like and actually helped me in some of the decision-making processes that I was in the midst of right then. So yes, in the future, we'd love to have a group of physician-certified coaches who are able to reach out to the people who share membership with CMDA. And who better to reach the life of another doctor, Dave, than another doctor? Where does credibility come? Even though a coach has skills that can be deployed across the spectrum to any place or any time, somehow there's something about a doctor that makes him more willing to listen to another doctor. You've yeah. walked in his shoes. You've lived that life. There's a certain amount of built-in credibility there. And that's my desire, is to help other doctors live for God.
And what would you add to that?
Well, I just recently returned from giving a seminar on coaching at the WIMD, or Women in Medicine and Dentistry CMDA meeting, and I was floored by the amount of interest of people there. I actually offered some sample coaching sessions, and over 30 people signed up.
Oh, my.
So
you didn't do anything else the rest of the conference.
Well, yes, I've actually been following them up since the conference over the phone. But I was very impressed with the amount of need within the women of CMDA for someone to listen well, who gets their life, to ask the questions that will help them get unstuck, pull out of where they are, and be freed up to really discover all that God has for them. And my mission statement, I guess, is to partner with God and help women physicians get freed up to move from where they are to where they once only dreamed or hoped that they could be.
That's great. Steve, where can people get more information? I know this is developing right now, but a lot of it's already starting to come together, and people, I bet, out there saying, I want more. I want to know when this is going to be available. What do they need to go to?
Well, there's certainly already some information on the website. If you Google, for instance, life coaching for physicians, you'll find CMDA right at the top of the list. So that's one place to go to. They can email coaching@cmda.org, and they can reach any one of the three current coaches with CMDA. They can always call CMDA headquarters, and they'll know where to direct them to the coaching ministry and to either myself, Ann, or to Ken. So there are a variety of ways they can begin to get more information. And we strive to make connections with these folks. We realize that a lot of people calling won't be necessarily calling to get coaching right away. Mm-hmm. They're calling just because they're interested, they're curious, they have a need that's exposed itself. And so we want to take the opportunity to talk to these people without any commitments whatsoever, to give an introductory session that says, here's who I am, here's who you are, here are some things you could accomplish through coaching if you wish. And so we can begin to sort of cultivate that ground and give opportunity for people who are willing to make a commitment to change. It's difficult. There's a price to be paid for change. It's a high price. And coaching deals with those highly motivated people where the pain of not changing exceeds the pain of changing, and they want to change, and we're there to help them.
Steve and Ann, I want to thank you for your commitment in this area. I'm just really excited about the potential and the difference it's going to make in people's lives. And I'm going to be in prayer for you as you go forward. I'm excited to see this expand, and thanks for spending some time here with us at the microphone today to give our members just a glimpse of what's in store.
Well, Dave, thank you very much for helping with this initiative, and thanks for all you do in leading CMDA.
Thank you so much for giving us the opportunity.
I'm really excited about this new ministry of CMDA. You know, our goal is to walk with you along your journey of life throughout your whole career. We want to be there to assist you, give you opportunities, education. And I'm really thrilled about this new coaching ministry because of the many changes happening in healthcare. I think it's critically needed. We're already seeing that as people respond. If you'd like to get more information or explore the possibility of coaching, give us a call at 888-230-2637. Hey, Hey, listen, what are you planning to do April 30th through May 3rd? Well, I know what you should be doing. You should be at the CMDA National Meeting. It's going to be at Ridgecrest Conference Center in the beautiful mountains of North Carolina. The leaves are going to be budding out. It's going to be gorgeous, and we're trusting great weather. A great lineup of speakers, including Dr. Stan Key, our Bible teacher. You may not know Stan. I do. He is a phenomenal Bible teacher. And we have Brian Arner coming back as our worship leader. A great lineup of special speakers. Great recreation. Good times of fellowship. Networking. You really need to be there. And if you're going to come, bring somebody with you. Grab a student or a resident and say, listen, let me go with you to the national convention and introduce them to it as well. Bring the kids. There's a wonderful children's program. You'll be so restored and renewed. The theme this year, transform. And that's what's going to happen in your life. I hope to see you there. Speaking of transform, look out for the next issue of Today's Christian Doctor. That's the theme. It's got some great articles in it. Very practical things that'll help you in your daily walk with Christ as well as in your practice. And listen, after you read the issue, share it with another healthcare professional. Encourage them to join CMDA. Well, I trust you had a great time at recess, students, and now it's story time. And we have a special guest, Teresa Flores. She's a survivor, and I'm going to let her tell her story. Teresa, it's a delight to have you on Christian Doctor's Digest, and tell us your story. Why are we talking about this topic?
Because this is actually the second leading crime in the world and in the U.S., and most people have no idea about it. You know, I didn't realize that this was what was called what happened to me when I was a teenager. So it's crucial that we know this so that we can protect our children and women from this happening, too. It is really, truly an epidemic, but for me, I mean, most times this happens, it's, you know, a lot of times through runaways, kids in the foster care system, kids that have just been ignored or impoverished, maybe big cities. But we're seeing that there is a huge number of kids being sold by their parents, many times in rural areas of the United States. And for me, I was trafficked right out of my high school, which was in a upper-class neighborhood, and I get lots of emails from women saying that my story is very similar to theirs, so this can't happen to really anybody.
So tell me your story. What happened? You were trafficked out of your high school. How in the world does that happen?
Pretty easily, actually, especially when you're a high school kid and just looking for attention. I grew up with a mom and a dad and little brothers, and you know, I wasn't the typical kid that you would think this would happen to. My parents didn't beat me or abuse me, and I never used drugs, and I wasn't, you know, was not promiscuous at all. But we moved around a lot because of my dad's job. He got transferred a lot. So I was always the new kid, and I never knew anybody. So I think that's what kind of made me more vulnerable than others. By the time I got to high school, it was like my eighth move, and kind of, I would say, starved for attention like a lot of 15-year-old girls. A boy started paying a lot of attention to me, but I was from strict, we had, you know, strict parents, and I wasn't allowed to date until I was 16. And so I was 15 and not allowed to see him or talk to him, really. And one day after school, he asked me if I wanted a ride home from school. And, you know, this is like 6 months after him just always giving me compliments and being nice and stuff. So I thought, oh, no harm in that. That's not a date. But he didn't take me to my house. He didn't take me home. He said, oh, I forgot something in my house I need to pick up. You know, we're just going to go over there. And by then you're kind of stuck, you know. And so I thought, well, that'll be fine. I know this guy. I go to the same church as he does. And it'll be fine. So we pull up to his house, and he says, hey, would you like to come in? And that was kind of the crucial turning moment because I said no, my parents had taught me pretty well. But he just said, I like you. You know, I want to get to know you better. So being very naive, I said, okay, and went in. And he gave me a pop, which was laced with something, which I didn't know, obviously, at the time. And I got drugged, and then he raped me. And that was just a devastating to me because I had been a virgin. And I went home, and I decided not to tell my parents because I was embarrassed. I was ashamed. I thought they'd be angry at me. So a couple days later, he came up to me at school, and he had pictures. And he said his older cousins had been there at the same time and that I have to earn these back now, or they're going to share them with my families, you know, show them to my dad. They knew where he worked. They knew the name of his boss and told me they were going to take him over there. They said they put him around school, and they would take him to church. So in my 15-year-old mind, I thought, oh, my gosh, I have to do whatever it takes. And I still had no clue what that would entail, you know, very, very naive. So that started everything. That started 2 years of being called out of my house at midnight, taken and delivered to different houses for several hours, and then servicing men and being taken back home. I would get home about 3 or 4 in the morning and just take a hot bath and cry and pray and go to bed for 2 hours and get up for school the next day and do it all over again.
Wow. And your parents had no idea?
No idea. They would never have, you know, there's no way that they would have even thought. I mean, in our house, like, we slept with the doors closed, and so they didn't know that I wasn't there, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, they had no idea.
Were there more threats other than the pictures?
Oh, yeah. It continued with lots of threats being followed. My little brother was being followed. That animals appearing in my mailbox, saying that they were going to kill my family if I did any, if I, you know, told anybody. So yeah, it was a continual threats.
Were these high school age boys, were they working for someone else, or this was their own ring that they had?
They had a higher up than them, mm-hmm. but and son, he was older, but it was a very, I would say, very involved or network.
Yeah, yeah. So how in the world did you get out of it? I mean, it sounds like you're in a corner and they've got you trapped and it just got worse and worse.
Yeah, I truly had no idea how I was going to get out of it. And I got lucky, well, if you can say lucky. I was kidnapped one night and got taken to a motel where I was sold over and over again to probably over 20 men.
Oh my.
And when I just passed out from all the abuse. When I woke up in that morning, there was nobody there, and I was naked, and, you know, I found myself in this position of, wow, you know, they always take me home, and here I am. And I've got no clothing, no shoes, no money, no identification, and no idea where I am. And I'm 16. So I think a little angel, you know, whispered in my ear and said, get out of there. And I found my pajamas and I put them on. And I just started stumbling around. And I mean, I really, it was kind of like your darkest moment and thinking, you know, how has my life gone this way? What am I going to do? And being terrified that they're going to come back for me, I walked into a little diner, and this waitress looked at me and just knew. She just saw something, you know, that nobody had ever seen. She saw a kid that needed help, and she said, can I help you? You know, no teachers, no coaches, no doctors, nobody ever. I'm sure they saw the signs, but they didn't reach out to me. Hmm. And so I, you know, I told her I was fine. I'm, you know, crazy as that is. And she called the police, and they took me home. And after that, my dad was able to get transferred 1,000 miles away. And at that time, I basically started my life over.
Wow. You said no doctors. what should a doctor have been looking for? We're talking to a bunch of doctors here.
Yeah.
Let's say you'd showed up in the office for whatever, a cold or flu or whatever. Mm-hmm. How would a physician see cues to give him an idea or her an idea that something was wrong?
Well, first off, you know, really separating the patient from whoever brings her in, or if it's a parent, or if it's, you know, the boyfriend who's really trafficking her, is really crucial. And a lot of times you'll see that the people that bring them in will be very controlling and say they have to be in the room. Obviously, she'll probably be very nervous. And if you ask her something, I mean, she's been programmed to say everything's fine and to not trust anybody. So you have to break down that barrier, that wall, and really get her to trust you, to say, hey, you know, you can tell me. I'm here for you. I will help you. Many times she won't, you know, believe you, but if you maybe give her a card with a phone number on it of where she can call when she needs help, but really separating her from the guy is crucial. And then looking for the signs. We've been doing surveys with survivors in the past year, and 92% of them have experienced some sort of violence. Mm-hmm. So we're talking anything from broken bones to concussions to, you know, black eyes. A lot of them have gastric problems, because we know that that's a lot of your stress, you know, goes to your stomach and that area. So a lot of them experience gastric problems, suicide attempts, substance abuse, abortions is huge. So those are some of the implications that can happen to a trafficking victim.
How would people in the community have known? I know your parents were concerned, your grades were dropping, and they took you to a counselor, and you didn't feel free to open up with the counselor, or the counselor didn't push or press hard enough to get down to that level. Because this is going on around us. I was listening to one of your other interviews, and you talked about, you know, as you speak, girls come up to you all the time and say, yeah, that's my story too. This is going on, and oftentimes we're blind to it. How do, you know, spouses of physicians are listening to this, and other people, how would they pick up on clues other than being in a doctor's office?
Girls that are starting to use drugs, or they have an older boyfriend, and I'm talking like, you know, usually 4, 5, 6 years or older, starting to hang around older guys, you know, having signs of maybe they didn't have a lot of, you know, expensive things, and now all of a sudden they're coming in with their nails done, and running away a lot is a huge sign. We've seen a lot of these girls having numerous times where they're running away, you know, needing to get tested for STDs and requesting pregnancy tests, things like that is a big sign as well.
Teresa, tell me about how you moved into your ministry and what you guys are doing and how you're responding to this, because not only have you suffered as a victim, you're determined to be one of the answers to help bring other girls out of this. And tell me about SOAP.
Yeah. Well, I created SOAP 5 years ago. I was, like you said, you know, I was going on doing talks, and I was getting emails from people saying, my story, you know, is the same, and this happened to me, and this happened to me 50 years ago. And a young girl walked up to me at a high school, Catholic high school, and she said, my trafficker is in prison right now. She was 14 years old, a freshman in high school, and said, my mom used to sell me to the landlord to pay the rent. And, you know, I was shocked by all of them that are coming out of the woodwork. And I thought, we need to do more than just talk about this. You know, raising awareness and education is fantastic, but I need to do something to help those girls in that moment that they need help. And I was also seeing a lot of people in the audience saying, oh my gosh, what can we do? We got to be able to do something. You know, we're called as Christians to serve and to, you know, help the oppressed and the impoverished and the orphan. And there was really little that I could tell them that you can go out and do hands-on. So the Lord actually led me to this idea about, you know, helping the girls at that moment. I went to Detroit to do a talk, and I hate going to Detroit because my traffickers actually still live there. They were never prosecuted. And on my way home, I took a wrong turn and got lost, and I got scared, and it was late at night, and I just kind of cried out to God and said, what are you doing? You know, I thought you were here to protect me, and I kind of got mad. And so I thought, what is it that you want? You know, what more can I give you, Lord? And he gave me the idea of putting a bar of soap in the bathrooms of these motels with the human trafficking hotline number on them. Because, you know, when I was being trafficked, there was no hotline number. And I thought, wow, you know, this is going to reach her, because she goes to the hotels, she's taken there and dropped off, and she's left. And the only time she's really alone is in that bathroom to wash up. And I thought, this might work. And so I gave it a shot, and I started to call it SOAP, which stood for Save Our Adolescents from Prostitution. And I couldn't believe it. I was getting volunteers that said, we want to help, we want to donate, and we want to go around and do this at all the big sporting events where trafficking is just, you know, it quadruples. So we did our Super Bowl the first year in Dallas, and we gave out 10,000 bars of soap. And I was just, you know, so pleased. I was just so excited. And in comparison to 5 years later, this past year, we went to the Super Bowl. It was a two-day outreach with 500 volunteers, and we got out 100,000 bars of soap.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, the Lord is just working amazing in this. But I still don't have any grants. I still just work off donations from people. So I'm really looking to try and take this to the next level. We had been asked to go to the World Cup in Brazil and do it, but just because of finances and logistics, I wasn't able to do that. But we're already planning for the Super Bowl next year.
Do you have any resistance from hotels to use the soap?
A little bit. Sometimes it's because they need to get corporate permission, and that's one of our to-do lists, is to reach out to the heads of these corporations to say, hey, can you, you know, do us a favor here during these big sporting events, if a soap team comes and offers you soap, maybe just for that weekend, you can take it. And so that's usually the only, you know, resistance, is because of corporate permission. We went to Canton 2 weeks ago for the Hall of Fame week, Football Hall of Fame, and we had 120 members of the community and the Church of Nazarene, and we took out soap to 33 hotels, and every single hotel took it. It was 100%.
Wow.
And I was just, yeah, beyond that. It was great.
It's an answer to prayer. Tell me about your spiritual journey with all this, because obviously something's happened. So tell me how God worked and brought you back. Because, I mean, the tremendous trauma that you underwent at such a young age takes years sometimes to get over, and often a spiritual renewal has to take place.
People ask me, how are you able to do this? How can you get up in front of strangers and tell your story and, you know, travel and do this? And I my answer is just simple. It's by the grace of God. He gives me the strength to do this and the courage. And I do believe that this is, you know, his calling for me. I know that without a doubt. I knew that from the first moment. And I would say I had a strong foundation in the church growing up. And I really clung to that even while I was being trafficked, because that's all I had. I mean, they took everything from me. And I thought, this is, you know, all I got is my relationship with the Lord. So I was never angry at him, which is common for people to be angry when you're going through something traumatic. But, you know, I guess I was a little different. I clung on to him so hard. And after I got out of being trafficked, I don't say I lost my way, but I was just trying to heal and figure everything out. And I got into a bad marriage, which is very typical as well. And I started going to an amazing church and doing some Bible study and reading. And it just, you know, I just called out to him one day and said, you know, I need you. I can't do this anymore. And I just, it was at that moment where I literally heard him say, you're my daughter and I love you. And I realized that I was his child and I deserved everything that he has to offer. And so do all these other girls. And so I never turned back. I just kept going forward. And it was still about a good 10 years before I realized, you know, that I had actually been a trafficked, you know, victim. what that meant. And at that moment, I decided, you know, I was going to share my story with whoever wanted to hear it, wherever, because he gave me my voice back, and that was what he wanted me to do. So it's been quite a journey, but I've met the most wonderful people. I feel more loved and supported in my life now than I ever have before.
Tell me about your book. You took the bold step and put it all in writing and had tremendous impact.
Even throughout the years when I couldn't find anybody that would know what I was talking about, and I didn't even know how to say it, you know, out loud. And so I started writing just things down. And then I started trying to put it in a timeline, and eventually it became my first book. And I just self-published the first one because I wanted one teacher, one parent, and one student to read it, and I'd be happy. And it became very successful. And then I had a publisher come and say, we'd like to publish this. It's a Christian publishing company, which was very appropriate. And we marketed it. Edited it and got it out. And now it's, you know, been on the bestsellers list. And it's just amazing because I have young girls, you know, buy it and then pass it on to all their friends. And, you know, they'll see me again at another event. And they're like, I need another one because somebody wouldn't return it to me. And just to be able to go to the library and see it, it's a beautiful thing to know that people are, it's changing people's life. And then I recently wrote another one for the UK. I think it's published in Australia, New Zealand, Lebanon, and Singapore as well.
Wow.
And that one has a little different. It has a little bit more about the post-traumatic stress and the after effects of what I went through. So the book has been just a wonderful tool to be able to reach out to people so that they can, you know, read firsthand someone's story.
I love the title because it encapsulates the story so well, The Slave Across the Street, and I highly recommend it to our members to get and pass on to others as encourage them to read. Well, Teresa, thank you so much for being with us. Thank you for what you're doing and following the Lord and having such an impact on this important issue, and we'll be in prayer for you, and I trust some of our members will be volunteers passing out soap the next time you're in town.
Oh, I hope so. Yeah, they can go to my website, which is www.trafficfree.com, and it's TRAFFICKFREE, and they can see where we're going to be, and definitely would encourage them to donate to the cause and to come join us.
Great. Thanks for being with us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
I want to mention some other resources as well as Teresa's book, The Slave Across the Street. Trade of Innocence, a wonderful movie released in theaters. Actually, the executive producers were two of our members. It's literally been shown around the world. Just this last week, there was a big showing in Korea. And it's available, something great to show your family, use at your church or another venue, just inviting friends or to CMDA to get together. Two good books, too. In Our Backyard, A Christian Perspective on Human Trafficking in the United States, and it'll help educate you more on this issue. And the other book, Girls Like Us, another memoir from Rachel Lloyd, who was trafficked like Teresa was, and continue to give you insight and a passion for this issue. Human trafficking is everywhere. It's in your community. You may not know it, but it's there. I remember when I looked here in the Tri-City area sometime back, I was getting ready to do an interview, and I thought, well, you know, we're a rural Bible Belt. That's not an issue for us. And there are over 200 arrests involving human trafficking in our area in the last year and a half. This is where we are. We need to be on the alert and make a difference on this issue. And talking about making a difference, go to cmda.org/TIP. That stands for Trafficking in Persons. There you'll find our continuing medical education module on human trafficking. It'll help you recognize patients that you suspect of being trafficked and also know what to do with them. This is an excellent resource, the only of its kind across the country that we know of. Check it out, CME on Human Trafficking at cmda.org/TIP. Well, I hope you've enjoyed school today. We've had a great bunch of guests here in the classroom, and I hope it'll be helpful to you in your walk and service with the Lord. I know those principles that Dr. King shared are just timeless, and ones that we not only need to practice ourselves, but pass on to others. I'm excited about the coaching program that Dr. Sartori and Dr. Sen talked about. These are challenging days, and oftentimes we need someone who can give us some guidance down the path, help us to think through with questions what we need to be doing so that we've still got that same enthusiasm and excitement about serving the Lord in every aspect of our career. And then Teresa really gave us some food for thought on human trafficking and this enormous issue. We need to be part of the solution and help solve this enormous problem. You know, as we close this time, I want to talk about something maybe a little different than when I normally close it. It's something I've been thinking about. I just turned 63 a few months ago. And as you think and move into that stage of your career, and sometimes earlier than that, you start thinking about, have I got all my ducks in a row? And what's my legacy going to be? I mean, God could take me next week, or I may be here another 20 years. But I'm beginning to think even more about that and trying to do the wise things with our kids. I mean, Jody and I don't have an enormous amount of resources, but we do have some, and those will pass on to my children. I want to make sure I do that wisely, not putting too much into their hands. There's going to be a burden for them and something that could lead them down the wrong path because of the money that they've gotten from me. I want to leave a legacy in their life more than just money, and how can I invest in them and our grandkids better in these latter years of my life? And also, as I was thinking about the money end of it, I couldn't help but realize that all those retirement accounts that were tax-free have never been tithed. Kind of dawned on me. I mean, you know, the money was taken out before I got our check. We tithe with our church and go beyond that, supporting missionaries and people we know around the world and ministries we believed in and continue to believe in. But then I thought, you know, that money that has not really been tithed, I need to make sure that happens. I'm planning, and what we're going to work on now is actually taking that money in our will and giving it to what we want to support before the rest goes to our kids. And there's some great tax advantages even in doing that. But the main purpose is to help build God's kingdom. And we're going to support some of the ministries we really believe in. One of them is going to be CMDA. In fact, a large portion of it is going to be CMDA. I've invested my life in this ministry, and there's no one else other than healthcare professionals that are going to support it. And I want to see it, this investment in students' lives like I experienced way back in the 70s that were so transformative for me to continue. I want to make sure there's a ministry that walks alongside healthcare professionals throughout their career and giving them opportunities for service and speaking the truth and love into our culture, representing their views. And so we're going to give a generous gift to CMDA. You know, you may be getting to the same point I am, where you're thinking about some of these serious things. And I just want to let you know, if you're to that point, we've got services here at CMDA to help you do that, experts that can help you think through it and even make it happen. And I want to encourage you, if you need help in that area, contact our Vice President of Stewardship, Jamie Campbell, who can help you on that path. What legacy to leave? You know, I want to have ministry go on long after I'm gone, that is flowing from my passion to touch other people's lives and make a difference in them, just as Christ did in mine. So if we can be of assistance, don't hesitate to call us and support other ministries. I'm not talking just about supporting CMDA. You do what God has laid on your heart and make sure that that legacy you have goes on for many years after you're gone. Well, till we get a chance to get back together in the classroom, I'm trusting God's going to wrap his arms around you, encourage you in your daily walk, give you strength, give you wisdom, but most of all, help you to influence others for his sake. Because when it's all over, that's all that really counts. God bless.
Christian Doctors Digest is a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on Christian Doctor's Digest are not necessarily endorsed by the Christian Medical and Dental Associations.